Our theme for this afternoon deals with Israel in prophecy. And it is impossible to construct any sort of a scheme of prophecy without taking into account the hundreds of passages, both in the Old and New Testaments, that speak about Israel. And the conference committee has selected a very capable panel of men to discuss this question with us this afternoon. Those of us who are interested in the truth, in evangelism, in conserving the members of the Church of Jesus Christ, need to be informed about some of the issues regarding Israel in Bible prophecy. For many of the brethren are being confused, and many are being misled. And many have failed to come to realize the wonderful position that they have in Jesus Christ and through Jesus Christ. We'll be having two speakers here and then a song, and we'll give you a chance to get up and stretch. And again, if you have questions this afternoon as the men are speaking, we urge you to sign put your question on a card, and the ushers will be receiving those questions a little bit later on. We were sorry this morning that we were not able to get to all the questions, many good questions that we did not get to answer. We hope that does not discourage you this afternoon from participating in this part of the service. And if you've never stayed through one of these question sessions, we urge you to stay through the whole session, because that's when the fireworks start. And that's the good part of the whole service. Now, I've been told to emphasize that we would like to have your name on a registration card. If the ushers are present with registration cards, where are the ushers? You got some cards? Our first speaker this afternoon is Roger Chambers. He's minister with the Westside Church in Hamilton, Ohio, and on occasion a part-time instructor at the Cincinnati Bible College. And he'll be dealing with the subject, Promises to Israel. He'll be followed immediately by Dr. James Girdwood, professor of Bible in the Great Lakes Bible College of Lansing, Michigan, who will speak on the captivity and the restoration, and then we'll be led in a song immediately following these two speakers.
For the first time in a long time, somebody gave me a topic that was exceedingly easy. I won't have a bit of trouble covering it in 20 minutes. And so this is the easy part of the session. The other fellow's got the hard part because, and I'm very serious, the assignment given to me was that on this day the Lord made a covenant with Abram, saying, to your descendants I have given this land from the river of Egypt as far as the great river, the river Euphrates. God promised the gradual elimination of the Canaanite tribes to Moses when the time came for this promise to be fulfilled. Exodus 23, verses 30 and 31. By little and little I will drive them out before thee until thou be increased and inherit the land. I will set thy bounds from the Red Sea even to the Sea of the Philistines, and from the desert unto the river. For I will deliver the inhabitants of the land into your hand, and thou shalt drive them out before thee. And it is immaterial whether the river of Egypt in Numbers 34:5, which constitutes the southwestern border of the promised land, was a little stream called the Wadi El Arish today, or whether it was the Nile River. Many today want the boundaries of the promise to the patriarchs to include the Nile River. I would simply point out that the weight of evidence is that it was this small river which was the eastern border of Egypt as it faced Palestine. On this map behind me, this 50-by-100-foot map, which you won't have any trouble seeing, you can just look up there and see the river of Egypt, and then a few miles to the east, this very small stream, the Wadi El Arish, which was the boundary to Palestine, as we would call it. And then you just go northeast a few miles, and you hit the Euphrates River, and in between you've got the land promised to the patriarchs. On the south, you had the desert. On the north, what we would call Syria later on. Israel occupied the inheritance. At the end of the 40 years of wandering, Moses, in his farewell address, recalls that he had given them the go-ahead to claim the promises of God. Joshua 24:28, behold, I have set the land before you. Go in and possess the land which the Lord swore unto your fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to give unto them and to their seed. He said, the time is here to claim that inheritance. And after the conquest was accomplished, quote, Joshua let the people depart, every man into his inheritance. Joshua 24:28. The inheritance was temporary and conditional. The inheritance of Israel, of a land with houses they had not built, wells they had not dug, was accomplished and was accompanied by warnings and gloomy predictions. Possession of the land depended upon fidelity to God. The dying Joshua said to a people already turning away from God, therefore it shall come to pass that as all good things are come upon you, which the Lord your God promised you, so shall the Lord bring upon you all the evil things until he have destroyed you from off this good land which the Lord your God hath given you. When you have transgressed the covenant of the Lord your God, which he commanded you, and have gone and served other gods and bowed yourself to them, then shall the anger of the Lord be kindled against you, and he shall perish, and ye shall perish quickly from off the good land which he has given you. Joshua 23, verses 15 and 16. The heathen were not driven out because Israel preferred cohabitation with the people of the land rather than to pay the price of driving them out. As God had commanded, the covenant peoples forfeited their right to retain their possession. Judges chapter 2, verse 20 and following. And the anger of the Lord was hot against Israel, and he said, because that this people hath transgressed my covenant which I commanded their fathers, and have not hearkened to my voice, I henceforth drive them out from before them, that through them I may prove Israel, whether they will keep the way of the Lord to walk therein as their fathers did keep it or not. Therefore the Lord left those nations without driving them out hastily, neither delivered he them into the hand of Joshua. The pagan altars were left standing, and Israel lost control of a portion of the land. And the land that Israel actually controlled varied and was subject to a great deal of change through the vicissitudes of history, their own history. The promises have been declared fulfilled. Dispensational methodology notwithstanding, Joshua declared that the land promise made to Abraham had been fulfilled. Joshua 21:43, and the Lord gave unto Israel all the land he swore to give unto their fathers, and they possessed it and dwelt therein. Joshua 21:45, there failed not of any good thing which the Lord had spoken unto the house of Israel, all came to pass. Joshua 23:14, and behold, this day I am going the way of all the earth, and you know in all your heart and in all your souls that not one thing hath failed of all the good things which the Lord your God spake concerning you. All are come to pass unto you, not one thing hath failed thereof. That the promise has been fulfilled was confirmed by Nehemiah, chapter 9, verses 7 and 8. Thou art the Lord, the God, who didst choose Abram and broughtest him forth out of Ur of the Chaldees and gave him the name Abraham and found his heart faithful before thee, and made a covenant with him to give the land of the Canaanites and the Hittites and the Amorites and the Perizzites and the Jebusites and the Girgashites, to give it, I say, to his seed, and hast performed thy words, for thou art righteous. The narration of Stephen in Acts chapter 7 includes the information that the promise made to Abraham concerning the land of Canaan was fulfilled with the Exodus and the period of conquest. He said, this is Acts 7:17, but when the time of the promise drew nigh, which God had sworn to Abram and the people, to Abraham, the people multiplied in Egypt. Now Joshua and Nehemiah and Stephen rise up with one voice to agree that the word of God to his servant and friend Abraham concerning the land that he would give to his heirs has been vindicated. Needless to say that there are many who would stand up and deny this. Little book which most of you probably are not unaware of, The Late Great Planet Earth, I read from page 176, and he says about the middle of the page, we are premillennialists in viewpoint. The real issue between the amillennial and premillennial viewpoint is whether prophecy should be interpreted literally or allegorically. Now, let me stop here and say that statement is beneath contempt. The ignorance of it is running a dead heat with the dishonesty of it, and it's what my kids would call a cheap shot. It simply ain't so. But on this very same page in which he says, well, the real issue is, if you don't agree with me, you just don't believe what the Bible says. We and we alone take the Bible for what it really says, and you amillennialists or whatever you are, you just allegorize it away. On this very same page, he says this, to us the biggest issue is over the question, does God keep his promises? For God unconditionally promised Abraham's descendants a literal worldwide kingdom over which they would rule through their Messiah, who would reign upon King David's throne. Precisely the first century Jewish messianic view, of course. The Jews who believe in the Messiah will also possess the land which is bordered on the east by the Euphrates River and on the west by the Nile. Arbitrarily puts it into the future tense that Israel has been promised this, and of course the contention is that it simply has not been fulfilled. Scofield says in his reference to this, the gift of the land is modified by prophecies of two dispossessions and restorations. Two dispossessions, that is of the land, and restorations have been accomplished. He's speaking of the conquest and the period of the return at the close of the Old Testament period. Israel is now in the third dispersion from which she will be restored at the return of the Lord as king under the Davidic covenant. Now, which is a very good example of dispensational methodology. In the first place, the first point I would make here is that this prophecy made to Abraham and the other patriarchs concerning the land is, number one, foundational, number two, fundamental to the view. It is an essential part of the view. Without it, the view does not survive. Which view is that the Jews in the modern nation of Israel are a necessary fulfillment of Old Testament prophecy and New Testament prophecy? The fundamental and foundational prophecy of those who would see the nation of Israel as the fulfillment of prophecy is this land promise. It has not been fulfilled, therefore it will be fulfilled in the future. And we see Scofield's methodology. He says, well, they've possessed it and been run out of it twice, and now they're run out of it, and they'll possess it again, and that'll be it. I don't know how you settle on the number three. You have to possess it three times, and it's yours. I guess the third time's charm. But I want us to see the methodology. You see, this is standard. This is the way the thing works. If God does not cooperate in any particular point in history, all you do is recycle history. You just run it through again. And maybe he'll cooperate next time. You see, Jesus came, and he did not set up this Jewish world empire that the Lindsay has in store for him next time he comes. And so they simply relegate the church to as a mystery parenthesis, quote, and just give him another chance. And we're just going to recycle the whole thing. Just rebuild the temple, recall Israel, restore the Roman Empire, reclaim the land. And there's no doubt in my mind, whatever, that if Jesus does not fit into this nationalistic, materialistic, egotistic salvation by race plan the next time he comes, any more than the first time he comes, that same crowd, after he has come, on the way up or down, or whether they're raptured or ruptured, whatever, that they are going to have their pencil and paper with them, and they are going to be carefully programming another opportunity for Jesus to finally do what they are determined that he must do if he's going to be the kind of Messiah that fulfills Old Testament prophecy. And the last thing I have to say is this, that the verses we read where Joshua and Nehemiah clearly state in so many places, God has fulfilled every word. The promises that he made to the fathers, he has done it because he is righteous. That you have to go a long way to find statements any more literal than that. And I think that we ought to let these statements stand as indication that God, in the area of the land promised to the patriarchs, has done what he always shall do. He's kept his word.
Speaker's short.